so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Hello again, I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder. And folks, we got a good one for you today. She has done it all: actress, author, ex-wife to rocker Eddie Van Halen. She's a weight loss spokesperson and now a celebrity chef. Valerie Bertinelli is on today's show.
Really? Valerie Bertinelli here?
Here.
Well, she's going to have some great company, Mark, because we're also going to talk to someone who made the leap of faith. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and it landed him on the podium at the national championships. And a member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame on how to create the life you want.
Plus, we're going to chat with one of America's top personal trainers who has some advice that could actually save your life. All of that and more today on Growing Bolder.
I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. And that's something all of us want to do, even though most do not. And it's because of one four-letter word: fear. We're afraid. We're afraid of failure, of humiliation, of not being who we really think we are. But change is the only way to truly live your life to the fullest.
You know, Bill, that is a great way to get into a woman by the name of Valerie Bertinelli. We all certainly know of her, if not know her. Remember how we all fell in love with the absolutely gorgeous, clean-cut girl next door on One Day at a Time? And then at 20, she marries the amazing Eddie Van Halen. And then, very publicly, her marriage falls apart. She later admitted to having a drug problem. She gained a lot of weight. And Bill, nobody could have blamed her if she would have run away to hide. But she stood up and she rebuilt her life. She kicked the drugs, she remarried, and now in her 50s, she looks absolutely incredible. And I'm pretty sure she would want to tell us all this. It is never too late to live the life we want. So what do you say we give her that chance? Valerie Bertinelli joins us now. Valerie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Well, what a lovely show to have about... It's so funny. I was just reading a book last night. It's a book that's been in print for over 30 years, and it's called Love is Letting Go of Fear. And it's even at this age where I think I have it all together, it still makes me cry because I think we're still all so afraid, and I can only speak for myself, and I just want to take fear out of my life because then only love can shine through.
Well, we are so grateful that you're willing to take the time to chat with us about what you're up to in your latest projects, because we really are kind of swimming in the same pond here. You know, Bill and
all
I have
we've
dedicated our lives to trying to help people understand that it's never too late to do whatever you want. So what do you want? What's up with Valerie Bertinelli these days?
There's so many things I want, and yet when I've always loved to cook. And so right now I have a show on Food Network where I get to do what I love, what I've done for a very long time without televisions and cameras in my kitchen. And it's probably the hardest I've ever worked because it's just me up there talking and cooking at the same time. But it's also the most fun I've ever had. But yet, even with doing this, I'm like, is this what I want for the rest of my life? I'm always so curious. I'm reading newspapers. I never get through all of them. I do my crossword puzzles like Betty White does in the morning. And I'm so curious about life and people. And I love the way you open the show about what would we do if we weren't afraid, if there was no fear in our lives. And there's that great old quote, you know, what would you do, really, really do, if you knew you couldn't fail? And I don't know that I've ever answered that question. And I don't know that I'll ever be able to, but I like searching for that answer.
But see, Valerie, we sort of think that you have. You know how it is? The flip side of what you just said is that whenever we have problems, our first instinct is to hide them, to bury them, even from ourselves.
Yes.
Not only you stood up and you didn't only embrace yours, you really put yourself out there in order to help other people who are going through the same thing. When you stepped into this weight loss arena, what in the world were you thinking? I bet every publicist in L.A. went, what is she doing?
Yeah. And still to this day, you know, what was that about? What did I learn through that 7 years of experience? And I've learned that I'm really good at taking off weight, that I really know how to do it, and I've been doing it my entire life. It's when it starts to creep back on that I start to get fearful, and I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What are gonna people are going to think of me? And I've got to let that go. I'm not a master of anything. I'm always trying to figure out what's best for my life and how I let the things that get me down affect who I am is what I've still got to keep finding that answer for, like without hurting myself with food or hurting myself with drugs or alcohol or whatever, you know, or gambling or sex, or whatever those addictions may be for people in this world. How do we not feel guilty? How do we not beat ourselves up so that we reach for things that aren't healthy for us? And if we don't beat ourselves up, we tend to reach for things that are very healthy for us. So why is something that sounds so simple so challenging to do?
It's a great question. We are chatting with author, advocate, actress, so many different things, Valerie Bertinelli. And Valerie, you mentioned your cooking show on the Food Network. It is called Valerie's Home Cooking. And in many ways, it's not unlike maybe a drug addict doing a show on drugs. I mean, you've admitted that food is a problem for you. Why do you put yourself in the middle of it every day?
Well, that's very funny, and a very good point, because we all have to eat, and we have to learn how to eat to nourish our bodies and not to squash any of those feelings that we don't want to feel. We have to use food to nourish our bodies and not as a drug, and I'm learning to do that day after day after day and still be able to enjoy all the foods that I loved growing up. So it's trying to find that balance, and I'm... You know, the funny thing is when I'm in the middle of shooting my show, I actually lose weight because you're in the kitchen cooking for 12 hours. You're in the middle of doing things. You're writing recipes. You're talking with your crew. You're busy, so you're just able to eat the meals that you need to eat without snacking, and that's my big downfall is snacking. So I actually am on a better regimen when I'm doing my show than when I'm not and I get bored and I have nothing to do. So I try not to get bored. I try to keep myself busy. I try to keep my hands busy when I'm not working. Like I said, I was doing my crossword puzzles. I love to read. I knit. I started coloring. You know, those adult coloring books. I'm searching, always searching.
You know, there's another aspect to the food thing, Valerie, that Mark and I were talking about, and it's that, you know, how do any of us get over our problems? It's with the support of the people that we love that are the closest to us, and one thing,
really good therapists.
And we don't eat. Nobody eats alone. You know, you eat with your friends, and in your show, you know, you've got your husband Tom on, and Wolfie, your son is on, and you bring Betty. You know, all of these people that are part of your life. Food is very healing.
Well, food, yes, the way I grew up, food was love. And that's how you showed how you loved one another. But it was a healthy love. It was, you know, manja, manja, eat. But it wasn't like, you know, eat until you're stuffed and eat to where it hurts you. It was just food and love made sense. Unfortunately, as I went on in years and I would lose track of that and instead use food as a drug and not as just love and taking it in increments and enjoying what I had without overstuffing myself or snacking on foods that weren't good for me. All the things that I love to cook and love to eat, they're not bad for you if they're taken in moderation or when they're taken in moderation. So nothing is really bad for you. You just have to take it in moderation.
You know, the more we listen to Valerie Bertinelli, the more curious I am and the more close attention I will pay to see what she does next, because A, she is fearless, and B, she has this innate curiosity. You know, what does it take, Valerie? We ask everybody, you know, share with us the moral of your story, the life lesson of Valerie Bertinelli. What is it about you that enables you to risk, to fail, to get back up, and to put yourself out there? How can we be more like you?
Oh, God. And I'm always thinking, how can I be more like that person? She looks so strong, and she looks like she really has it together. And in reality, none of us really have it all together. I think as long as we continue to search, and as long as we continue to search for the things that we know, our brain is so smart if we let it be, and our conscience and our morals are really, really strong if we let them be. And we know when we're doing something right, and we know when we're doing something wrong. And I think we just have to listen to that inside voice, the good one, because I have a lot of inside voices that are telling me what a terrible person I am and all that stuff too, but I shut those up. And I remember that I wouldn't be here, none of us would be here, if we weren't here to be a light in this world, and if we weren't here to be kind to one another. And you can just do a little test for yourself. It's an easy test to do when you're walking down a street, or you're in the mall, or you're in the grocery store, and when you smile at a stranger, and you'll see them smile back, isn't that a lovely feeling? That is, as opposed to when you growl at a stranger because they're in your way, and that continues on. It's so easy to spread the light than it is to spread the darkness. There's enough darkness out there. We need more light.
Valerie, in our last 30 seconds, you know, Hollywood loves people who are 20 and 30. Is life in your 50s? What's that like?
It's interesting. I still feel like I'm in my 20s, but my knees are telling me something different.
Well, we always thought you had the cutest knees in town, and we love
the bee's knees.
We love what you're doing, and we love your message, and we love that you have the courage and the strength to put yourself out there as an example for others, because it makes a huge difference, not just for the others, but for you yourself. It's very cathartic to be someone who helps other people fight some of the battles that you've been through. Folks, be sure to check out Valerie's Home Cooking on the Food Network, foodnetwork.com, for more info, or keep up with everything going on, and you never know what's next, at ValerieBertinelli.com.
Coming up, after a three-decade layoff, a prominent orthopedic surgeon makes an athletic comeback. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton here, and you're listening to Growing Bolder. And Mark, one way or another, it seems that all of us are involved in some kind of a comeback. You know what I mean? Whether it's coming back from a long layoff, or coming back from an injury or an illness, even coming back from the loss of a job or the loss of a spouse.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bill. And of course, it takes courage, it takes strength, it takes determination to make that comeback successful. Dr. Rich Constant's comeback was something that he never saw coming. In fact, it's something that he never even thought about for 30 years, something he didn't even know was possible. Rich Constans loved running and jumping as a young boy, and he was pretty good at it. He became the New York State High School long jump champion, and in college was the captain of the Dartmouth track team, where he won the Ivy League long jump championship. When he put on his cap and gown, he took off his track shoes for what he thought was the final time.
I took my last jump at my graduation day in college. I was wearing my cap and gown. My family came to the pit. I took my final jump, and for 30 years, I never even thought about it.
Rich retired from long jumping and began pursuing his other passion, medicine. He completed medical school at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York and built a distinguished career as one of Florida's top orthopedic surgeons, specializing in sports medicine and reconstruction of the knee. He's not only cared for weekend warriors, but also the Orlando Magic, the University of Central Florida, Rollins College, and even World Cup athletes. In nearly three decades, he never once thought about long jumping until he learned that a former teammate was competing in Masters track and field.
I thought to myself, you know, I haven't had a single injury. I've been so fortunate. I'm in decent shape. I have two teenage sons that I'd like to be an example for. I want to give it a try.
Specifically, he wanted to show his sons how
to make a plan, to set a goal, to execute it, to do it.
He decided to go for it. His first call was to longtime friend, personal trainer, and world-class athlete Rod Jatte, who created a custom training program designed to put Rich on the podium at the U.S. National Championships.
We do core work, stretching work, speed work, work in the pit. It's a lot of work just to run down the pit, run down the track and jump in the pit.
Under Jatte's guidance, Dr. Consens quickly regained speed, strength, and flexibility. And with the help of his family, he also made major changes in his diet.
My whole family has really supported me. They prevent me from eating cookies when I get home.
Commitment to excellence. Everything that he does, his career, his family, his athletics, and for him to be able to do that juggling the way that he does is really inspirational.
Encouraged by his progress, Dr. Richard Consens entered his first meet in three decades.
Step through.
And not just any meet, the Masters Track and Field U.S. National Championships in Boston.
You know, it's the strangest thing. When I'm on the head of the runway, I feel the same as when I was 21. I think I'm going to do the exact same thing, and it's that first step that I realize that I'm not the same.
Not the same, but good enough to achieve his goal of making the podium, taking the bronze medal, a performance that earned him a spot on the U.S. team at the World Masters Championships in Lyon, France, where, competing against the best 55 to 59-year-old long jumpers in the world, he finished 10th. Encouraged by his success, Consens is training harder than ever for the upcoming indoor national championships and plans on making the podium at the world championships when he turns 60. He's taught his sons the lessons he wanted and is teaching others by example that it's never too late to pursue the passions of your youth.
Feels good. It just makes you realize that if you do have a talent or a knack for something, you know, see it through. Go do it and do it your entire life. No longer do you have to quit when you're out of high school like we used to in the 70s and 80s. You can do these events that you like to do for your entire life.
As an added benefit, Dr. Consens says the entire experience has given him an even better understanding of the psychology of aging athletes, their desire to bounce back quickly, and the commitment required to do so. And for all of us, a reminder to get moving, to take care of ourselves, because the better shape we're in, the better are our chances of bouncing back at any age.
We almost never say too old anymore. There are situations where we can't do surgery on somebody or can't treat them because of their illness, they're sick, or they have a contraindication because of other medical problems or other medications, but hardly ever do we tell people that they're too old. If you're 100 years old and you're healthy and you've taken care of yourself, we don't limit what we can do to help you out.
Great advice from the long jumping orthopedic surgeon who's proving that it's never too late to take a leap of faith.
Good.
It was good. A very inspirational guy. And Bill, a great example of being open to possibility, returning to long jumping, something he never thought about. He didn't even know there was such a thing as Masters Track and Field. But when he heard about it, he didn't say, I'm too old. I don't have time. It's going to take too much work. I don't need that anymore. I might get injured. He said, why not?
And look at the result, Mark. The guy is in better health than ever. He's made many new friends. He's had new experiences. His family life is richer. He even says he's a better doctor now, all because he didn't listen to the dozens of reasons not to do something. He said yes when life came calling. And Mark, isn't it interesting and kind of exciting that they're now replacing knees and hips in 90 and even 100-year-old people, provided the patient's in good health? And that is encouragement for all of us to get in shape and stay that way as we get older.
Yeah, the key, as it always is to find the motivation, the inspiration to get out of your set routine and jump into life. Up next, a scientist on a mission that could save your life. This is Growing Bolder.
Support for Growing Bolder provided by...
If you or a loved one are over 65 and need a ride, check out Uber. Many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats like groceries and over-the-counter medication. Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584.
I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton here on Growing Bolder, and our next guest is a scientist at the UCF College of Medicine's Burnett School of Biomedical Sciences. Boy, is she amazing. She's working on a method to find, to track, and to kill metastatic breast cancer that has spread from tumors in the breast to other parts of the body.
Yeah, this is the cancer that usually kills women because although tumors have been removed and the doctors can't find any more cancer at the breast site, a small number of undetectable cells can travel and invade other organs, and then they can grow for years before they're actually found. This is not only incredibly important, but fascinating work that involves nanoparticles. Articles and more. Let's find out more as we welcome Dr. Annette Khalid. Hey, Doc, how are you?
Doing well.
And before we talk about your research, Dr. Khalid, tell us how you got into it, because I understand you do have some very personal reasons for your passion for cancer research.
Yeah, it started when I was actually a teenager because my grandmother developed cancer. And she was living in Florida at the time, and we were in California. And she actually had to go through, you know, chemotherapy and really, you know, invasive treatments. And she ended up coming to spend some time with us in California just to recover, you know, from all the surgeries. And just getting a chance to be with her after all that, you know, that she had gone through really, you know, made me want to be able to do something, you know, to cure this really very serious disease.
You know, Mark brought a really interesting topic up in the intro. It wasn't just breast cancer, but it's metastatic cancer that we seem to be focused on talking about. What is that exactly, and what makes it so deadly?
Well, it's a very serious form of the cancer because, as you alluded to earlier, it's not something that just can pop up and you treat and you get rid of it. It's a cancer that's very insidious. It takes a long time to develop. It's undetectable at that early stage. And then when it does develop, it actually hits vital organs, you know, like the lungs and the bones and the brain. And at that point, it's very difficult to treat because it becomes drug resistant and, you know, just a whole host of problems that come with it.
We're speaking with Dr. Annette Khalid, who is one of the nation's leading researchers looking for a cure for breast cancer. She's from the UCF College of Medicine's Burnett School of Biomedical Sciences. And Dr., breast cancer, despite all of these efforts, remains one of the top cancer killers of women. What are the latest developments in the efforts to actually find a cure?
One of the major things that you may be hearing in the news is called personalized approaches, where we try to understand what's unique to each individual's cancer and then design a therapeutic approach that would work for that individual. The challenge is that although we might be able to do, you know, some genetic typing or some understanding of the different aspects of a person's tumors, there's just not enough drugs out there to be able to personalize a treatment approach. So that's what my lab has really been trying to focus on, is try to develop, you know, personalized approaches that could help particular women's cancers, especially those that become drug resistant.
There's so many great things that seem to be percolating right now in the fight against cancer. We're really thrilled with what's happening at the UCF mm-hmm. College of Medicine. Tell me a little bit about this. Cancer cells, killing them seems to be something we sort of have a handle on, but it's finding the cancer cells and then being able to deliver the medicine right to them seems to be the big issue now. How do nanoparticles figure into what you're working on?
So nanoparticles are almost like little carriers that you can put addresses on and send them to the parts in the body that you're interested in. So this is the benefit where, you know, a standard drug is basically administered systemically. It goes everywhere in the body, including the tumor cells, but also to other normal tissues. With a nanoparticle, you can actually put an address on it, basically, and say, you know, hit this type of tumor or hit these particular cells. And although it'll travel through the body, it won't be taken up by normal tissues. It'll go specifically to those targeted tumor tissues and then deliver whatever drug or therapeutic cargo we've put on them. In addition, they're actually really good for imaging as well, because along with cargo, you can actually add some sort of marker or an imaging agent that will help then actually detect the nanoparticle and even the tumor itself.
And of course, as good as all this sounds, as great as it might be, there is a race on because women are dying daily of this. And you were recently awarded a grant by the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, one of just 200 top scientists to receive your funds for research. And here's my question, Doc. You know, we have this vision of people, you know, working alone in their lab doing research, and it may be impossible for one person to create this breakthrough. Are researchers sharing? Are you guys collaborating? Are you working together to find a cure?
Yes, exactly, because, you know, I can't do it all. I'm not an expert in every single area. So, you know, we work together as teams. You know, the nanoparticles, for example, was developed by a great collaborator of mine, Dr. Perez. He did all that work, and I worked with him to develop the cargo. The Breast Cancer Research Foundation is awesome because they really unite a lot of scientists together. I just came back from a meeting in New York, and, you know, we were just meeting with people doing so many different techniques that really facilitate and advance my own research. So, yes, we work as teams. We talk. We collaborate. You know, that's the only way, actually, we're going to be successful, like you said, in a really rapid period of time.
So, Dr. Khalid, where are we now? What would you say, how close are we? Are we at close to finding a cure, or are we just now trying to detect and control and maybe arrest cancer, or is a cure on the horizon?
Well, you know, the most important thing with cancer is detection and early detection. So, you know, we can't stress that enough to make sure that, you know, everybody takes advantage of all the great, you know, diagnostic tools that are already out there that help detect cancers. But, you know, the next thing is, as I said, you know, to develop new therapeutics, to develop new treatment approaches. That's going to take some time because we want to make sure that those treatment approaches are going to be useful and not damaged like normal tissues. So there is a process to that, and it takes quite a few years, but the good thing down the road is we're all working on these treatments. So it's not going to be something like a 20 years away. You know, it'll be a few years, but it's coming down the road.
You know, one of the beautiful things about doing radio interviews is you can detect the passion or lack thereof in someone's voice. And folks, this is a cancer researcher, and you can hear the passion for her work. And as you said, Doc, this is a process. Yours is extremely time-intensive work that, as you noted, can take years and years to bear fruit. How hard is it for researchers like you that have so much passion, especially researchers like you that have a personal reason to want to cure and slay this demon? How hard is it to be patient?
Well, it's not just to be patient. You know, we have ideas, and we test our ideas in our laboratories. And truthfully, 9 of 10 times those experiments don't work, and then we're back to the drawing board. Okay, you know, I have to restructure my idea, redraw my experiments, redo what we planned. So it is, you know, it's a process, as you mentioned earlier, that, you know, we go through as we work in the labs. But the exciting thing is that 10th experiment that does work, that moves us forward. So that's what we do. We just go step by step, systematically testing things, and eventually know that, you know, at the end we're going to have something that's going to help people.
And what is it that keeps you optimistic as you walk through that door every single day?
Well, to tell you the truth, I've got a great lab. I've got some wonderful UCF students who just, you know, energize me as well. And just to see them and their passion about what they're doing in the beginning stages of their career, you know, that's what moves me forward as well. It's the research, but also the training that we do with students.
And it's great because, as Mark said, hearing the passion from the voice of somebody on the front lines of the fight against cancer really is inspiring to us all. Dr. Annette Khalid from the UCF College of Medicine's Burnett School of Biomedical Sciences. As we said, one of the many warriors on the front line in the battle against cancer. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your dedication. And thank you for fighting the fight that all of us desperately want to see won. You guys do a great job out there, and it's a pleasure to get to talk to you.
You want a pep talk? Up next, a member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame. Major companies hire this guy to inspire their top executive teams. Today, he is here for you. Next on Growing Bold.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts.
My guard stood hard when abstract threats to noble to neglect.
You're listening to Growing Boulder. I'm Bill Schaefer along with Mark Middleton. Our next guest is one of the world's most sought-after sales consultants, lecturers, and teachers. He is the CEO of his own worldwide organization that works with companies of all sizes, and we're talking about Fortune 100 companies as well, to help them increase productivity.
He is also a member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame. He's a cancer survivor, a mountain climber, and a graduate of the Players Workshop of Second City, one of the top improvisational comedy schools in the entire world. A very unique and interesting man. Let's welcome Doug Dvorak. Hey, Doug, how are you?
I'm feeling great. Thank you, Mark and Bill. It's a privilege and pleasure to be on Growing Boulder Radio and talking to your listeners.
Well, you're kind to say so. We know how busy you are, so right back at you. Thank you. You know, Doug, we talk a lot about wanting or needing to make changes in our lives. Some of us have to wait until things get really bad in order to find the motivation necessary. And in a way, that's pretty much what happened to you back in May of 1998. Tell us why that month was so instrumental in your personal transformation.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was on that hedonistic treadmill trying to win the more game, and I soon recognized in May of 1998, specifically May 18th, when three things happened to me that changed the trajectory of my being, my focus, my life force. And I was a sales and marketing executive in the information technology space. I was going Mach 5 with my hair on fire each and every day, and I was trying to win that more game, more stuff. And I quickly recognized on May 18th at the doctor's office, Dr. Jeffrey Bacall at St. Alexis Medical Center in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, doctor's building 2, fifth floor, suite 537, when Dr. Bacall said, "Doug, you've got cancer." And my reaction to the C word was the big D word of denial. That happens to someone else. I've got my plans, but when you receive the death sentence of cancer, at least for me, I really internalized it, and I recognized then and there that the only way out is through, and that I had to make some significant changes in my life, first and foremost, you know, dealing with this cancer. And once I was trying to cope with that, my dad fell out of a third floor window to his death in May of 1998. So it was a full plate, but I think my higher power, the universe, was telling me the trajectory of my being on that hedonistic treadmill, was trying to win the more game. And I finally recognized I'm never going to win the more game. Gates, Buffett, you know, Larry Ellison with Oracle, the Sultan of Brunei are going to have more stuff. So it wasn't so much then about success. It was altering my perception and my daily focus of being significant. And what was significant for me was getting better, leaving corporate America and really following my heart and my passion, which was to be a sales trainer and motivational speaker. It wasn't fraught with immediate success. In fact, I launched my business in August of 2001, and I remember my brother-in-law Dave saying, "You quit IBM with a pension, insurance, and great benefits to start your own business." And then, you know, 9/11 happened, so there was a lot of stress, but the best decision I ever made, and I tell my students and people I coach, that the only way out is through, and don't wait till you go through a 598, because we all go through a 598 in some way, shape, or form. We don't get out of this journey we call life and living without a little pain. But for me, it took that dealing with cancer, dealing with my dad falling out of the third floor window, to really recalibrate my thinking from success to significance.
Now, two things could have happened. You could have just plummeted off the side of the mountain when all that hit you, but you didn't. You moved forward. How do you know, it's, and when you hear it, obviously you needed to change your focus, but it's not obvious when you're in it. How do you take that first step to change your direction?
For me, it was all about looking and having a gratitude list, looking at what was, albeit I had some challenges with cancer and the insurance piece and not feeling good and multiple surgeries and treatment, but recognizing, you know, what I did have in my life, a loving family, friends, and the ability to make a conscious choice to not be a victim and focus on the solution and not the problem. You know, we've all heard the glass half empty, half full. It's really powerful, but not to pay it lip service when you're in the bowels of a 598 like I was. You can go, when you come to the fork in the road, take it, positive or negative. And I chose the positive. It was tough, but, you know, for me, it was that conscious choice of the choices I had then and there to suit up, show up with a positive attitude and not be a victim, but be a survivor.
We're speaking with Doug Dvorak, folks, who is one of the world's top motivational speakers and in-demand consultant for Fortune 100 companies. And Doug, you've got a bit of an alter ego, a character that you first developed back at Second City called Dr. Ernest Carpe Diem. He's made you a bunch of money. What is Dr. Carpe Diem's message?
Well, Dr. Ernest Carpe Diem, I think as you mentioned on the intro, I'm a member or graduate of the Players Workshop of Second City, you know, Bill Murray and Chris Farley, and it was a great honor and privilege to attend that two-year program in the early 90s. And an outgrowth of that was for our final, if you will, our last session was to write, produce, direct, and star in our own SNL one-and-a-half-hour live presentation on the main stage of the Second City Theater in Chicago. And an outgrowth of my experience was Dr. Ernest Carpe Diem, sort of lampooning the traditional motivational speaker. So Ernest being in Ernest, Carpe Diem, Latin for seize the day. So it's a great outlet for me and still is when I present or do some improvisational comedy. So Dr. Carpe Diem is a graduate of FU, Frankfurt University. So a little play on words, double entendre. So I go in and I'm brought in by companies to do not only strict sales training, sales coaching, motivational speaking, but if they want a little lighter fare, I bring out the good doctor and we have some fun, some improvisational humor.
In our last minute, it's hard to believe we're getting down to it already. This is really interesting. And Mark and I feel like we're at the front lines of trying to convince people aging. Aging is not a disease, but rather it's a time of opportunity. Do you get that? Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, would I go back to, if I could go in the Wayback Machine to do it over? Probably not. I think that we are on the cusp of so many exciting things. And as you say, rebranding aging with the advances in diet, exercise, mental acuity, emotional, that I think that I feel better now at 54 than I did when I was 34, and I think that's following your heart and doing things that's really not so much focused on success but significance, and that for me is suiting up, showing up every day, high honor and privilege to do interviews like this with Growing Bolder, but to get my message out that, you know, we do have choices. We can make decisions that lead us to significance, however we define it, you know, giving more to our family, giving more to our society, to our friends and family, donating time. But first and foremost, the choices we make determine the lives that we lead. And follow that with passion, what I like to do. Find what you love to do and do it the rest of your life. And that's what I found now in my speaking, my improvisational comedy, and in sales coaching.
It is a great takeaway, and we're going to leave it at that. Doug, we're big fans. We pay close attention to what you're up to. Thank you for sharing your valuable time with us. Folks, we all need a little encouragement every now and then, a little motivation to break free from the routine that can keep us from becoming our best and happiest selves, and Doug Dvorak is one of the best at that. To learn more about Doug, his books, his speaking, and more, just head to DougDvorak.com. That is Doug, DVORAK.com. Coming up, one of America's top personal trainers, weight loss and nutrition experts has turned her attention to a frightening and rapidly growing concern, skin cancer. What you need to know about melanoma next on Growing Bolder. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
We are growing bolder by the minute. I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton. This is interesting here. For nearly 30 years, our next guest has devoted her entire career to personal training, to specializing in metabolic weight loss and performance nutrition. How successful has she been? Well, Mark, Martha Stewart called her the only personal trainer that has ever really made a difference.
Yeah, she's made a difference in the lives of many, many people, which is why she's a regular on Dr. Oz and many other national media programs and publications. She's the author of the best-selling book, The Metabolism Solution, and two new books, Bill, that are just out this year, an illustrated children's book that's called The I Love My Body Book. Man, that sounds like a good one. And her most recent, which is what we want to talk with her about today, it's called Win the Fight, Stomp Out Melanoma. Let's welcome the one, the only, Lisa Lynn. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
How about you guys? How are you guys?
We're doing fabulously. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, one might wonder why a renowned fitness expert like yourself has written a book about cancer. Unfortunately, though, this one does make a lot of sense. You have seen fitness enthusiasts developing melanoma at a record pace. What's happening?
Yeah, it's disgusting, to be honest, and it's a little embarrassing to me, but the truth is most of us who start fitness for vanity reasons when we're young, and it certainly was my driving reason, I was overweight, not only do we, you know, take good care of our bodies that way, but we tend to get a lot of sun. We do a lot of exercise outside, and then if you're in any kind of competition, fitness modeling competitions, you tend to have to really, you never notice how tan these people are?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they bake, and I don't think we think down the road what this could possibly do. I know I didn't. I think I thought my fat thighs looked better if they were tan, but joke's on me, because we actually are really harming our bodies, and deep, deep down under this, let's call it tanorexia, is an insecurity that we feel inside, that we don't feel worthy or good enough, so we buff it up, we tan it up, and You can run, but you can't hide from this stuff.
So there are things that we do ourselves that increase our risk of developing melanoma, but there's some other things that you mention in the book as well that really are kind of mind-blowers. What does the color of your eyes have to do with that?
Yeah, have you ever thought of that? I mean, I think if someone had said to me, I have green eyes, that green eyes tend to be of Scottish-Irish descent, are much more susceptible to melanoma. We tend to burn really easily, and we don't think about it. So maybe we even get more sun trying to get that brown tan. And the truth is it's very harmful. In fact, maybe twice as much harmful to those of us with lighter eyes.
And what if we now get the message? We hear it, we protect ourselves, but what if we were one of these kids like myself back in the 60s and 70s that were lifeguards? We not only would lay in the sun, we would put baby oil and iodine on our skin, we would put aluminum foil near there. Is that going to come back to haunt us?
You know, it does, and I'm one of those. Not only that, I live in the Northeast. I get seasonal affective disorder, and I even get a little psoriasis this time of year. So I would hop in a tanning bed, or that was my you know, excuse for going in. And the truth is, it does become an addiction, and this skin cancer that we're talking about today, melanoma, is no joke. It's not just a little, you know, basal cell that you can get popped off your body. Melanoma is very serious, and I don't think people are taking it seriously enough. It's one of the reasons why I felt really led to write this book, because I don't think we're being told. I didn't know what melanoma was, to be honest with you.
So Lisa, there's the other side of this, too. I mean, you go to the beach sometimes and you see young children who their mothers and fathers have slathered them with sunscreen, and it's almost like they think they have a dome of invincibility. Does sunscreen do what we think it does?
You know what, that's a great point, and I'm glad you bring up the young kids, because nowadays we're outside all the time, and everybody says, what you just said, well, I put sunscreen on. That doesn't mean you're really protected. One, these things you have to make sure your sunscreen doesn't expire. Two, you're supposed to be putting on about an ounce every couple of hours. Who does that? The sunscreen tubes would last like two trips to the beach, maybe. And then third, the sun decreases our immunity. So while I wrote this book as a survivor to other melanoma survivors about how you can, you know, win this fight against cancer, anybody who has any kind of immune compromise really needs to understand that when you go in the sun, and boy, does that stuff feel good, you're really kind of decreasing your immune system. And if you're fighting cancer or any other kind of illness, you really need your immune system tip-top fighting shape. So the last thing you want to do is go hammer it by being out in the sun. Now, we're allowed a certain amount of time outside each day, but when I had melanoma and I really was scared, I had to stay out of the sun, I set my timer on my phone and just walked my son to the end. He was taking a sailing lesson to the end of the dock, and I walked back, sunscreen, glasses, whole thing. That was my 20 minutes in the sun right there.
Wow.
And I don't think we realize, just like we don't count our calories on Thanksgiving, how much time we're really getting out there.
You know, it's a great point. We're speaking with Lisa Lynn, who is a internationally renowned personal trainer and fitness expert who's written a book about stomping out melanoma called Win the Fight. She, as she noted, is a cancer survivor, and Bill, like many do, they come back with a vengeance to try to knock out the thing that tried to knock them out. You mentioned these tans. A lot of them don't look real, and in fact, they are not. What's the deal with tanning beds? Are they safer than the sun, or is this something that needs to be outlawed?
You know, it definitely needs to be outlawed. In fact, Australia has outlawed them, as well as a few other countries, and they're still around today, and you're not supposed to be able to sign up for them unless you're 18. But the truth is, you've got 15- and 16-year-olds who sign up, and can, you know, if they pay the money, they give them their tanning sessions. And these are far more dangerous than the sun. To be honest, working in gyms, we always had tanning beds, and man, they gave the best naps. But we were actually trained to tell people that these were safer than the sun, so you should get a base. Wrong. Anytime you see any kind of a tan on your body, that's your body's melanin, you know, screaming out, hey, you've damaged me. And so it's really important to know, not only are these tanning beds super, super powerful compared to the sun, but say you decide to go the natural route, this is not the same sun we used to have due to the ozone layer. We don't really get the protection we used to. So when you and I went out with baby oil on the foil, which felt good, if you did that now, it would probably take you 10 minutes to get the amount of sun that you got 10 years ago or 20.
So, Lisa, you're talking about how the best way to fight this is, you know, to be smart, but also to be as strong and have as bolster our immune systems as best we can. Working out, being in shape, being at the optimal weight, how big a difference does this make?
Huge, by the way, because, you know, this is not an estrogen-type cancer, so diet doesn't really, so the doctors say it doesn't play a role. But here's my take on it. I am a sugar addict, by the way, so if I just decide, hey, I'm sick, I'm going to eat my sugar feelings to death, the truth is sugar compromises the immune system, and no matter what you're fighting in your life, could be depression, could be just a common cold, you need to have your immune system up like your army, and you need a powerful, strong army, I say PMS, physically, mentally, and spiritually, because in order to fight this beast and win, because what you believe, we really do create our outcomes a lot of the time. And so you really have to work on all three of these systems to get in tip-top fighting shape.
She is Lisa Lynn, folks, one of America's top personal trainers, fitness experts, who is now trying to help us all win the fight and stomp out melanoma. That's the title of her new book. It can help save your life. You can find out more about Lisa and her work at linfit.com. That's linfit.com. We want to leave you with this reminder, folks. We call it the truth, proven by multiple large-scale research studies. And this is critically important information for all of us, whether we're 25 or we're 85. And here it is. If you believe the negative aging stereotypes that are ingrained in our culture, you will become them. If you view aging as a time of loss, sickness, impotence, fear, incompetence, loneliness, helplessness, then that is what you will become. Conversely, if you view it as a time of opportunity, vitality, creativity, excitement, usefulness, and significance, that is what it will become. Our minds are that powerful. So stop thinking about growing older and start thinking about growing bolder.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty traps. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-right prejudice leave before, rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white, spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers, foundation deep. So much older then, I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stand.